F1, number 3A.
Now, we have seen how the kingdom period blends over to the prophetic era, that the kingdom period establishes in us that tremendous outlook which sees that only the coincidence of principle and idea is a standpoint from which we can handle evil. That the Lord must be able first to speak to my Lord, which means that my Lord, my principled sense of being has first to be established. And then only this true coincidence of God and man as a spiritual agreement becomes alive within each one of us and gives us that standpoint, that throne of grace where we sit to the right hand of His Majesty on high, from which we can look out into the world in two big dimensions. The first dimension is always that dimension where God looks out as Himself and sees reflected Himself in the universe. In other words, that big dimension where we begin to see that principle has an idea and always expresses itself as a principled idea operating always in its principle. Then we have that second big dimension, that in order to establish that not only in heaven above but also on earth beneath, in order that to establish that vision of this translation of principle to idea as concrete being, as demonstrable being, this translation must also have a secondary function or secondary dimension, namely to translate every misconception out of itself back into the true understanding of this translation. So we always will find in the prophetic era, we'll find these two big coordinates, these two big dimensions of being, the one showing that principle always expresses itself as an idea, as principle's idea, and in order to do that, that principle has a Christ which always will come to every misstatement, to every mistranslation, to every misconception, and to every misunderstanding and translate it back into a true statement, into a true translation, into a true conception, and into a true understanding. Now with this I have said the whole of what we are going to do next week. And on these two big dimensions we will see how each prophet will fit in into this pattern. Now, saying that, I have said something which is quite familiar to us in the language of Mrs. Eddy, namely that God, or in divine metaphysics, let's say, we know two scientific translations. We know the scientific translation of immortal mind, translating principle always to its own idea, to the point of idea. Second, we have the translation of mortal mind as translating every misconception and misunderstanding and mistranslation out of itself back into a true statement, a true understanding. If that has been achieved, then both translations have fulfilled the Christ mission. Have fulfilled the Christ mission, namely to translate the infinite to the point of idea, not only to the point of idea in the absolute, but to the point of idea where each one of us is conscious, is consciously conscious of the idea of principle. Then, at that point, the understanding of principle is established within us. Then the Lord can speak to my Lord. And that is where the prophetic era ends, and that's typically Daniel. Now, about these two translations, we must never leave out of sight, say first, that there are always two translations. The translation of immortal mind to the point of idea, where Mrs. Eddy says, Christian Science translates God to mortals, to us. But it does not only translate itself, that marvel of translation is not only that God comes to us, but that it has in itself that saving power which saves us from every misconception about God. That is the second translation, where Mrs. Eddy says, Christian Science translates matter back into mind, where we can see that whenever mind comes to understanding, that the misunderstanding of mind disappears. That whenever spirit comes to our understanding, matter disappears. Whenever soul comes to our understanding, a false sense of identity, of sense testimony, and so on, disappears. So whenever principle comes to our understanding, you see that's the first translation, the second translation starts in, it makes always personal sense disappear. And so it is with life. The moment life comes to our understanding, it not only comes to us in ideas of life, but also at the same time, the second translation takes place, the disappearing of a false sense of life, disappearing of death, lack, etc. And so with truth. The moment truth comes to our understanding, translates itself to us as the ideas of truth, it can't help but have also that second translation in itself, that it begins to dissolve every false sense in us, every erroneous sense in us. And so is love. Love coming to us, translating to us, it isn't far away, it translates itself, it comes to us and we feel that love. But at the same time, this wonderful sense has in itself the Christ power, the saving power, to free us from everything which is unlike love, which is unlovely, which is hateful, jealous, envious, and so on. So, let's remind then always that there are two translations with two very different dimensions, but that at the same time they are one. They are always coordinated in one. So to say that we can say, well, after all, there is only one translation, namely the Christ, but that Christ translation has always two dimensions, I would say, or two directions. The one is the positive, the absolute positive, that it says the infinite is not just one infinite whole. It's not just one infinite pile or mass, not just one infinite space, but it is an infinite which translates itself infinitely. I don't know if you can say that infinitely. An infinite diversified, classified, and individualized ideas. That the infinite in this way really becomes for us also infinite, because in each individual idea it does manifest itself as a principled idea. Now that is the more absolute sense. We just have to keep this recurring and recurring. More absolute sense. But that absolute sense wouldn't be a real savior if at the same time this consciousness of this first translation would not dissolve at the same time every misconception about the infinite. And that's the second translation. The second translation is that on the ground of the first translation, the second translation always takes place. Now, that's very important. Let's never forget, therefore, that whatever the problem is which we have to tackle, that we never start with the second translation. Human sense would like to start with the second translation. Human sense says, here I have a problem, I want to get out of it as quickly as possible. How to get out? And wants to translate it, the problem, translate it right back into the idea. Well, the prophets show that we can't do that. Mrs. Eddy shows that we can't do that. That the power of saving is the first translation. That if a problem presents itself, we can't do anything else but to follow Mrs. Eddy's line and order, namely, first to go back to the first translation. First to go and sit at the right hand of His Majesty on high, to principle. And look out from principle, how principle looks at it. From principle, with principle, like principle, and for principle. And in that round, we come to true statement, to a true translation, afterwards to a true conception, and force to a true understanding. And only in this true translation lies the power which, I don't know why, but that's the fact that has been revealed through history and through the Christian thought, that this has the power in itself, the Christ power in itself, to free us from misstatement, from a mistranslation, from a misconception, and from a misunderstanding. And if it does free us from that, we are free. We manifest the idea of principle. Now this is the framework of the prophets. So I just repeat it again and again, you don't mind. I have just learned through all these years that one can't repeat enough. So, you know, this week, I'm quite sure that at the end of this week you will feel that you have gained a new standpoint, that you begin to think and feel and be conscious from quite a new standpoint than perhaps before. But we can only do that if we are scientific and let ourselves be recruited unto that principle of the 4,000-year period, which says, to say it in other words, which says, now whatever we will do this week, we are not going to be a Moses. Moses who said, thou shalt. Thou shalt not. That's not the prophetic era. The prophetic era says, God saith. You start with God, always, and not you, and not with shall. You start with God, they speak, always. We'll train that until it is in our bones. To start with God, with the first translation, that starts with God. And it doesn't leave any more God. It starts with God, and we think from God, and as God, and, never forget, for the purpose of God. That's the rhythm. I said, we don't start with you, or thou, shalt, but with God. And we are not going to start with shalt, and must not. The prophets doesn't know that. The prophets don't know about thou shalt and thou shalt not. Why not? Because they start with God, and with God is grace. With God everything is perfect and is grace, and with God is the power, and with God is the magnitude of His glory, and it's the magnitude of His grace and of His blessing, and there is no shalt and no must and no mustn't. Not that I would say Moses is not right. Not that I would say Moses' attitude of thou shalt is not a part of the system. But it isn't the prophetic era which we are now going to culture. Am I clear about that? Not that you go home and feel, well, Max has said Moses is an old past. That's an old boy. No. What we will say is that we must now try not to look at the prophets as Moses would look at the prophets. You know, I say that because I have 2 years' classes behind me with my best students who had about half a year to find their way to change that standpoint. They would tell me all the prophets as Moses would tell me. I don't like that. The prophets must tell the prophet story, the standpoint of God and of grace. You don't mind saying that? Yeah. All right. It only helps. See, so we have already won 2 points which we shall never leave. We will, this week, always think from the right hand of God's power, from the throne of God. And that throne of God is a throne of grace. It is by God and with God and as God and for God, and it has nothing to do with a moral effort. Now, I haven't said a moral effort is nothing. I have just said the prophetic era is that era which is different than the Mosaic era, which is an era which is a standpoint of the Christ, and the Christ says, there is God, and God works from Himself, by Himself, as Himself, and for Himself. So, you see, there is no moral effort in those prophetic texts. Always that there is the power of God, good, manifesting itself and bringing everything into order and into line with principle and establishing that principle in every idea. Until every idea is operating as God's idea in the plan of God. So, you begin to feel these prophets must be much different than what one has thought. Some people said, I'm not coming to these talks, I have had enough doom the last year. I don't want to have more doom. Well, the prophets don't say anything about doom. Yes, they write a lot about words about doom, but their message has nothing to do with doom. Their message is grace. The grace of God, the unlabored motion of God, which is so kind and so comforting that He says, that God says, you know, I love you so much, I work on you so much, that no error is left anymore with you. Well, that's very nice. I feel that's a very gracious and loving God. That has nothing to do with doom. Well, if one doesn't like error to be doomed, well, then I can understand it. But if one likes to see error to be doomed, so that the idea of God is restored in its fullness, then I think the prophets is a message, a very uplifting message, and not a message that dooms us. My word, we won't be doomed at the end of this week. I'm certainly looking that we will be lifted up and not doomed. So we have learned a further thing, a further point, that we shall never start with the second translation, which is very important. That starting with the second translation will fail, because if we start with the second translation, with the first degree, then we have a feeling that we must rise up to the second degree, and then to the third degree. And where shall we take the power to do that? Where shall we take the might? Where shall we take the energies to do that? Well, if we don't have the first translation, where God is the power to do it, where God gives the power to do it, where God gives the grace to do it, where shall we take the energy from? We could only take it from ourselves. See, then it would be a willful translation. That's not a scientific translation, it would be a willful translation. We could take it somehow from moral education. We have been brought up so and so. Well, then it would not be a scientific translation of mortal mind, but a moral translation of mortal mind. And we know that neither behind the human will nor behind morals stands the power of God. So, if we really want to have power and dominion over the first and second degree, we can't take this power anywhere but out of the first translation. So, when we come to the prophets, to each prophet, let's see that we will find the message of each prophet always from the point of God. Though, the message will be to translate error out of itself into truth. But the point of consciousness and of thinking will always be from God and reasoning out from God. Only that way, really, we can bring about the second translation, which to human sense looks to be an improvement. Especially that second degree, you see, looks to be an improvement, but which isn't an improvement. It only looks to the human sense an improvement, but, and the prophets will show that even clearer, will show that that which seems to be humanly an improvement is only a state which is less erroneous, which is less misunderstanding, less mistranslated, less misconceived, and less misunderstood. So, let's see this point clear, that what the prophets will tell us, and the prophets naturally tell us laws which apply to us and which apply to the solving of our problem, that in solving our problem with the standpoint of the prophets, we are never going to improve any situation. We are only going to make it less erroneous. That's wonderful. Because behind it, therefore, must lay another point, which we will keep in mind, that fundamentally the problem is always solved. That fundamentally we have always perfect God and perfect men, and there is nothing to be restored or to be reinstated. But that all that happens is only that something is falling away which tried to hide this perfection. So we have gathered quite a few facts which are important to remember over and over again. Now, having said that what the prophets are going to show will be these two dimensions. I don't talk about material or human dimension, two directions of the two translations. Now, in order to help in what we are doing next week, and I want to show you or give you a preview of the whole message. I feel I'm going to show you the end right at the beginning. The end to which I have arrived after long pondering and studying and exchanging ideas with students and so on. So that right from the beginning we are clear what we are going to do this week, and then I think it's much easier to follow. Now, what we are going to do is this. My title was, at the beginning, The 12 Minor Prophets, A Method of Handling Evil. Well, if one only takes 12 out of the 16 prophets, naturally it isn't quite fair to the four big boys. But I have done it because I wasn't so much at the beginning interested really in giving an all-around picture of the prophets, but much more, I wanted to have these talks as a help, as a practical help, how to use these translations in practical life and see how we can use them and so on. And so I felt that the text of 16 prophets would just be too big. So if you ask me why didn't I take the major prophets, I just tell you frankly, because they were just in text too big. I didn't want to rush through a lot of text. I wanted to take enough time. But naturally at the end I just felt, well, I couldn't do it without the big prophets. So I will take some time for the four major prophets, perhaps 2 hours or so, just to give the big lines. But I want to. But the main point will be the 12 of demonstration. Well, now, Mr. Dawley has already dealt with 6 of the minor prophets, and he has dealt with all the major prophets. But you remember that when he did it, he didn't take them one by one in the order as they appear in the text. First he took Micah and Jeremiah in an Oxford session. Then afterwards it was Amos and then the major prophets, Isaiah and Ezekiel and Daniel, and then he came with Hosea, yes, and then at the end with the last 3 minor prophets, Haggai, Zechariah and Malachi. You know, they are all called different in German. So you can see that when he was dealing with these minor prophets, he wasn't dealing with them in the framework of the whole 12 prophets. He didn't want to, it wasn't his intention to do. And at that time, really, if you think back, we were very much enthusiastic to see that each a book in the Bible has a structure. That was the new thing. You hardly can remember it, you know. How we were thrilled at that time to see that each book in the Bible had a structure. had a structure either in the world order or in the Christ order, we were just thrilled beyond words to see that. It was such an enormous revelation, and so that was his job at that time, to show that a book in the Bible was not just babbling on and babbling on, not blah blah blah, but that there was science behind it, and order behind it, and that it had a meaning behind it.